Welcome to Wealthability, where we learn how to make way more money and pay way less taxes. Hi, this is Tom Wheelwright, your host. Very excited for today's topic. Think about this. What if you could make every dollar you spend deductible? Our clients routinely are deducting 20 to 50% more of their expenses within 3 months. So today, you're going to learn how to legally deduct any expense you want to. So let's start just remembering what it is we're talking about, how the tax law works. So remember, the tax law is a series of incentives. It's a series of incentives from the government to do what the government wants us to do. There's one line that says all income is taxable, unless we say it isn't. Then there's another line, and this is the line we're going to focus on. It's a line that says no expense is deductible unless we say it is. So our job today is to figure out what it is we need to do to make an expense deductible under the law, because everything we want to do is going to be legal. We want to do those things that absolutely fit the law. Now, a lot of you will recall that we focus frequently on Robert Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant. There are four ways we earn money: as an employee, as a self-employed or specialist, as a big business owner, or as a professional investor. These are the four ways we're going to focus on, because how an expense is deductible depends on how you make your money. So if you make your money as an employee, there are certain deductions available to employees that frankly aren't available to the self-employed, big business, or investor. There are a few of those. And there are some that are just available because you're an individual. Okay, they're available to everybody. So whether you're an employee or self-employed or a professional investor, big business owner, it doesn't matter. Okay, so we're going to start with personal deductions. There aren't very many. Literally, there are not very many. And there's not much you can do to affect your personal deductions, all right? They are what they are. For example, your standard deduction is what it is. The only way you can affect that is to have more children, right? Now, you could. Actually, it doesn't even apply anymore, right? So a standard deduction doesn't affect how many children you have. Now, we have credits, and we're going to talk about credits today. Credits affect your children. All right, see, I got caught up because it used to be that you had personal exemptions. We don't have those anymore. So you can't even do that. So an additional child won't affect your deductions. It will affect your credits, but not your deductions. Okay, so we'll talk about credits in another course. So we're going to focus on the deductions. Now, the deductions we're really going to focus heavily on are we're going to focus on the deductions in the S quadrant, the B quadrant, and the I quadrant. And they're very, very similar to each other. Okay, this is where I know we typically look at the tax rates of the different quadrants, and typically we're looking at 40% in the employee quadrant, 60% in the self-employed quadrant, 20% in the big business owner quadrant, and 0% in the professional investor quadrant. Now, some of these are because of the difference is because of what can be deductible. In the self-employed quadrant, here's the issue, that there are a lot of deductions that are available if you behave. Remember, if you behave, you have to behave in order to have what they have in the B and the I quadrant, which is, you know, lots of wealth and successful businesses. You have to behave like them, okay? So what we're going to talk about mostly today is how to behave like the big business and the investor, professional investor, when it comes to deductions, because they behave differently, okay? Different behaviors mean that we get different results, right? Different behaviors create different results. You know, we like to say, if you want to change your tax, you need to change your facts. Well, here's why. When we talk about deductions, we're going to focus on how do I make it deductible? Not is it deductible? Not is it deductible? Because if I ask the question, is it deductible, I'm stuck. I'm stuck. I can't do anything about it, right? All I can do is make sure I take it. And that's where most people focus. Am I taking all my deductions? I think we need to change our mindset to not, am I taking all my deductions, but rather, am I making all of my expenses deductible? Am I making all my expenses deductible? If you're just saying, take all my deductions, that's just accuracy. Any good tax preparer can do that for you. Any good tax preparer can make sure you're taking all of the deductions that you're entitled to based on what you did that year. What we want to talk about today is, how do I change my situation so that more of my expenses are deductible? Does that make sense? So let's start. We're actually going to start with the E quadrant, and we're going to talk about personal deductions. Personal deductions. And what can we do to affect personal deductions? Well, the deduction that most people are familiar with is 401k or IRA, right? So what you do to affect that personal deduction is actually put money into it. What you're not doing is really change behavior. Now, you could put your money directly into the stock market, or you could put your money into a 401k or an IRA. If you want to postpone your income, remember, a 401k, 401k equals what we call deferral. The deductions I want to talk about today is, we want instead, I would like to focus, if it's okay, on permanent differences. Because if, I got to be able to spell it right? Permanent. Hang on, we'll get there. Permanent deductions. Permanent deductions. And the reason we want to focus on permanent deductions is because we never have to pay it back. So if we have deductions, we're going to really focus today on permanent deductions. In other words, if I have an expense, and it's just an expense out the door. Now, remember, a 401k is not an expense. A 401k is a deferral on an investment. So that's why we're not talking about 401ks today. We'll talk about those when we talk about deferral, not when we talk about deductions, because that's really not a deduction of an expense. That's a deduction of an investment. So instead, what we're going to focus on is actual expenses. So let's actually talk. Let's focus on the personal, because there's one big one that I want to talk about. And that big one is charitable. Now, this is actually where we can have the biggest impact as an employee or somebody without other deductions available to us or other means available to us. We can have an effect with charitable, right? Frankly, you don't even have to be charitably minded, okay? You don't really have to be charitably minded. All you have to do is understand that the tax law, the government wants you to be charitable. So here's what we're going to do. The one opportunity we have, the one big opportunity we have, is there are certain state endorsed. I'm going to call them state. And this is, you know, this is state, like Iowa state, right? State endorsed charities or state endorsed charitable deductions. And what happens is that if you give to these particular charities, you get a credit. Now, I said we're not talking about credit. We're talking about deductions, right? But here's what happens. Let's say I get a credit for state taxes. Okay, so if I take a dollar, $1, and I donate it, and I get a $1 credit, am I out any money? No, I'm even. I'm even because I got a dollar credit on my state taxes, which probably aren't going to be deductible, right? So I get a dollar credit on my state taxes, and I gave a dollar. However, that also, but I get in addition to that dollar, in addition to that credit, I get a deduction of a dollar. I get a $1 deduction. This is state, and this over here is federal. Remember, we're paying two taxes. We're paying state taxes and we're paying federal taxes, and the laws don't always match up. And any time that you get an opportunity to play one jurisdiction, a jurisdiction is like somebody who taxes you, right? Like a state, a city, county, federal. Anytime you can play one jurisdiction off of another, there's an opportunity. Look, state taxes, because there's a limit, state taxes may not be deductible. Okay, when there's a limit, if we're limited, state taxes may not be deductible. Charity is deductible, and it's deductible in most countries, by the way, not just the U.S. So charity is deductible. State taxes aren't deductible. So if what we do is we convert. So we're always talking about converting. We want to convert an expense to a deduction. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about converting an expense to a deduction, because remember what we said at the beginning. No expenses are deductible unless we say they are. That's what the Internal Revenue Code says. That's what the tax law says. So we have to look at what's the expense. Okay, we look at what's the specific expense. Now, how do we make it deductible? Now, an individual can't make a lot of their deductible, their expenses deductible if they're an employee. It's not available. So here's one where you can actually convert it from an expense to a deduction. And again, this is state taxes, right? So this is the expense is a state tax, which for a lot of people is not deductible, okay? And what we're going to convert it to is a donation. We're converting it to a donation that is deductible. Now, be very careful. We want to make sure we're not out of pocket, right? So if we just give money to a charity, we're taking a dollar and converting it to maybe 40 cents worth of deduction, right? Because a dollar of deduction is only worth whatever our tax rate is, right? It's only worth whatever our tax rate is. So if you look at it, $100 deduction at a 30% tax bracket at 30% is equal to $30, right? So trading $100 for a deduction doesn't make any sense. And I hear this all the time. I hear this all the time. Oh, I need to spend money because I need the deduction. That's stupid. So you're going to spend $100 to get 30. I'm going to give you a secret. Pay me $100. Pay me $100 for tax services. Pay me $100 for tax services, and you will absolutely get your deduction. Or give it to charity. That's fine. Either way, give it to me. I'm a good charity. Give it to me. Give it to a charity. Whatever you want to do. But you're giving up $100 for $30. That makes no sense. It never makes any sense. Unless you get the money. If you get the $100 back through a state tax credit. So I give $100 to the charity, and the state gives me a credit off my taxes. So I'm even. And then I get a plus on top of that. I get $30. Right? On top of that, I get $30. Now I'm $30 ahead. So you're going to want to play this again. Listen to this over and over again, because I want you to get in your mind that what we want to do here is we want to increase our bottom line. We want to increase our bottom line. So we're not going to spend money just to get a deduction ever. We are never, ever, I want you to repeat after me. I will never, ever spend money just to get a deduction. I will never, ever, write it down. I will never, ever spend money just to get a deduction. That is a horrible idea because you're giving up $100 to get $30. How does that make sense? On the other hand, if I can spend $100, get $100 back, and get the $30, I'm way ahead. So that's what we're doing with this state tax benefit, okay? And actually, there's lots of states who do this, okay? I know Arizona has several charities. I know New York is doing this. I know there are other states doing this. So pay attention to that one because this is a way to make something that may be non-deductible, an expense like a state tax, and make it deductible as a donation. You're just changing the character from non-deductible to deductible. And we can do that, by the way, with any expense, okay, if we're in the S, B, or I quadrant. So we're going to shift gears here. We're going to go to the S, B, and I quadrants. In the S, B, and I quadrants, now what we have is we have something available to us called a business expense. So we're going to spend the rest of the time here talking about business expenses. You're going, oh, I'm just an employee. Okay, so what do you need? You need a drum roll, business. In order to have a business expense, you must have a business. So start a business. It's not that hard. Online, okay? Online businesses are so easy to start, all right? I have buddies who make millions of dollars on online businesses, right? I have clients who make millions of dollars online businesses. I have clients who teach how to start an online business. So it's available to you. So now we're going to talk about business deductions. Okay, so we got a business expense. Once we make the expense business, now it becomes deductible. Now, what does it take to be business? Well, there are four rules, okay? Four rules. Rule number one is it must have a business purpose. So why is that even a rule? You're going, well, it's business expense, must have business purpose. The fact that you pay it from your business account does not make it a business expense. The fact that you pay it from your business account does not make it a business expense. In order to be deductible, it must have a business purpose. So you could, and I know people who do this. They use their business account to pay for, I don't know, their Christmas gifts for their kids. You use your business to pay for Christmas gifts for your kids. Is that a business expense? No, it has no business purpose. It has no business purpose. So it must have a business purpose, okay? Most of the expenses that you spend on a daily basis right now have no business purpose. So what we have to do is we have to change it from a personal purpose to a business purpose. We're going to talk about, let me give you travel as an example, and we'll talk about the rules for travel in just a minute. Normally, when you travel for vacation, there is no business purpose. However, let's say that you go and you spend, let me give you an example. I travel to Utah. I love Utah. Grew up in Utah. I love the mountains. I travel to Utah because I like to get out of the heat. I live in Arizona. I want to get out of the heat in the summer. So I go to Utah. I go to Park City. I love Park City. Sounds like a personal expense, doesn't it? So what do I have to do to convert that to a business expense? Well, the very first thing that I have to do is I have to have a business purpose. Okay, so I have a few things in Salt Lake that are business. I have attorneys that I work with in Salt Lake, and I work with them with clients all over. I can meet with the attorneys. I need to meet with them, so it's a good excuse to meet with them in the first place. I have clients in Salt Lake City, so I can meet with the clients. I have property in Salt Lake City, so I can visit the property. I can work on the property, okay? I have developments in Salt Lake City, so I can do that. So what I can do is, as long as I then, my primary purpose of the travel becomes business, I can deduct the whole thing. There are times when I go to Park City because I'm speaking at a conference or because I'm attending a conference, right? Those are reasons that have business purpose. See, business purpose, it's a pretty broad designation. It has to have some business purpose. Number two rule. The expense must be ordinary. And another word for that would be typical. So let's go back to my travel to Park City. Would it be typical that I would want to meet with the attorneys that I work with? Would it be typical that I would want to see my properties? Would it be typical that I might want to go to a conference? Okay, I mean, conferences are always in nice places, right? In Arizona, we hold them in, you know, November, December, February, March, right? Because that's when it's nice here and bad somewhere else. Well, okay, so that would be typical to have a conference there, right? Especially in the summer. It's typical to have a conference in Park City. Prices are less on the hotels because it's their off season, and it's absolutely gorgeous, and people want to go somewhere nice. So there you go. So it would be typical for me to attend a conference. Why would it be typical for me to attend a conference? Because I have to have continuing education for my business. And we'll talk about education differently, separately. I want you to think about this, though. The education and the travel are two different expenses, and they're actually two different rules about how to make them business expenses. They're related, aren't they? If I travel to a conference that's not business, if I travel to a conference because I, you know, want to learn about gardening and I want to, you know, to improve my garden, that's not business because I'm not a professional gardener, right? I have no gardening business. Now, could I make that? Absolutely. I could have a gardening business, couldn't I? I could have a gardening business, then I would make that deductible. My point is that a lot of times deductions are interrelated with each other. And we're going to talk about two that are really, really interrelated when we get to really our top five deductions that people really don't get and tend to miss on a regular basis. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. It has to be typical. If it's not typical, it's not deductible. Okay. So the example I give is I have a buddy who owned a large insurance agency, property and casualty. He would, every year, he would take his best clients and throw a party for them in Las Vegas. And it would be a big deal. And he would spend a lot of money on them. Well, okay, is that typical? Well, for an insurance agent, that's typical. They're a salesperson, right? I mean, these clients, you know, they produce literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of income every year. They pay hundreds of thousands of dollars of premium. Would that be typical? Yes. For him to take me to Las Vegas and spend that kind of money as his accountant, would that make sense? Would that be typical? No, that's not typical. So what's typical, an expense may be typical in one situation, not typical in another situation. So make sure that it's typical. So here's the thing. We're going, oh, well, these are restrictions. No, they're opportunities. They're not restrictions. They're opportunities. I can look at an expense and I'm going, okay, how do I make this typical? How do I make it typical, right? What can I change in my facts to make this travel typical? Well, let me give you an example. Okay, so I go to Hawaii, and going to a conference in Hawaii Would that normally be typical? It may or may not be. It depends. It depends on your industry. Well, what if I make that a regular part of what I do? What if that actually, can I actually make it typical? And the answer is, of course you can. Can I make it typical? Yes, of course I can make it typical, right? I can change my facts so that I can change my tax, and typical is one of those ways to do that. Number three is it must be necessary. Oops. It must be, once again, it must be necessary. Now, what does necessary mean? It's necessary to do this if I'm going to accomplish what I want to accomplish. In other words, is it necessary for me to go to Salt Lake City to meet with the attorney? Well, not every week. And that wouldn't be typical anyway. Is it necessary for me to see them once or twice a year? Absolutely. Do I need to establish and maintain that relationship? Is it better if I see them in person and I sit down in their office? Absolutely. So it's necessary. It's not necessary that I do it all the time. It's necessary that I do it once in a while. Now, will that help me? Absolutely, because I'm referring clients, right? And this attorney is taking care of clients. So is it necessary that I maintain that relationship? Does that help my business? Yes. Necessary means it either increases profit or, okay, let's write this down. It either increases profit, or the intent is to increase profit or market. See, now in the case of the meeting with the attorney, will that increase profit? Will that maybe? Will it increase market? For sure. Because one of the things we are known for at Wealthability is that we provide great referrals. That's one of the things we're known for. So it absolutely increases my market penetration, because I can say, look, we have the best referrals in the world. When I can do that, then we literally have had people come to us and hire us and pay us enormous fees, primarily to get our referral list. Primarily get a referral list. Now, we provide them all sorts of other services, but when they came in, that's why they came in. That's not why they stayed, but that's why they came in. So we brought them, we actually were able to bring them in because of that. See, I'm just giving you an example. All right, I want you to start thinking, I want you to get rid of the box, okay? Don't be thinking outside the box, just get rid of the box, okay? And start thinking about, how do I make it necessary? How do I make that expense necessary? Is it necessary for me to meet with my clients face to face? Well, in this case, it's not. For the most part, it's not for me, okay? In this case, it is, because this is not just a client that I'm meeting with when I go to Salt Lake. This client also happens to be a mentor of mine, okay? And so having that face-to-face, and there's some things we can do face-to-face that we can't do over the phone or easily over the phone. So in that case, it is. Is it necessary to go see a property? Can I do it without? Yeah, absolutely. They're properties I've had for years and years, and I never seen them. I bought them, I rented them, I sold them, and I never saw them. However, might there be properties or times when I need to see the property? I need to see the condition of the property. Sure, absolutely. So my point is that, is it going to make it profitable, or is it going to increase my market share? If I can legitimately say that, it's very easy for it to be a necessary expense. Now, there's a fourth requirement here that I will tell you is the number one requirement. And the number one requirement, which I'm listing as number four here, and you'll understand why I listed as number four, is you must have the documentation. So the documentation doesn't make it deductible. What makes it deductible is business purpose, ordinary, and necessary. That's the rules. Lack of documentation will allow the IRS to ignore those. Lack of documentation, here's the way I like to say it. pretend. Documentation, document. Translates to a pretend deduction. In other words, it's imaginary, right? If you have imaginary documentation, you get an imaginary deduction. You have an imaginary documentation and an imaginary deduction. I will tell you, the IRS, the very first thing they look at, very first thing they look at is documentation. In fact, I have seen IRS audits where they had no clue. Literally, the auditor had no clue about these three rules. They didn't even know, they barely knew what the rules were. All they were looking for was documentation. And once we produced the documentation, they went away. They didn't even ask the questions. They didn't know enough to ask the questions. So they kept asking for documentation. This one audit, this auditor keeps asking for documentation, documentation, and we keep giving it to them. We gave him masses of documentation. And when he ran out, his supervisor finally said, look, you're out of bullets here. They've given you everything you asked for, and you've never done anything with it. Therefore, there's going to be no change on this audit. That was the result of that audit. Okay? That was the result of that audit. So on the other hand, I had another case where I handled the audit, and I had not worked with the client on their tax return or their documentation. So this was after the fact. They came to me after the fact. Oh my heavens, they had no documentation. The fact that we got any deductions was literally a miracle and a little skill, but it was pretty much a miracle, okay? Because if there's no documentation, there is no deduction. Once again, in fact, please write this down. If there is no documentation, there is no deduction. They will absolutely disallow it without the documentation. So you must keep your documentation. So while it's not what makes it deductible, if you have documentation, that doesn't make it deductible. If you don't have documentation, it will make it non-deductible. So don't go through all these steps. Here's one of the keys to the tax law. The tax law is full of details. We call them I's and T's. You must, what is it? That's right, dot your I's and cross your T's. And if you do not dot your I's and cross your T's, you will lose the tax benefit. It is over and over and over again. And let me explain why. It's exactly, we talked about this at the beginning of our course here. The law says no expense is deductible unless we say it is. What that means is that you must prove it's deductible. It's not up to the IRS to prove it's non-deductible because the law says it's non-deductible. The law already says it. The presumption is it's not deductible. Prove it is. That's why you say guilty until proven innocent. No, it's not that at all. It's just that it's non-deductible unless you prove that it's deductible. It's non-deductible unless you follow the rules. So you must dot your I's and cross your T's on these things. This is why working with a great tax advisor who also prepares your tax returns is critical to your success in reducing your taxes in the long run. I can't tell you how many people go, oh, well, let me get the strategy, and then I'm going to hire some cheapo tax preparer to do my tax return. Well, guess what? You're going to lose this. You're going to lose on documentation. You're going to lose because you did not dot your I's and cross your T's, because the person, you know, you go to El Cheapo tax preparer, right? You know, strip center tax preparer. You go to El Cheapo tax preparer, you go, oh, well, tax preparation, that's just mechanical. They're not working with you on dotting your I's and crossing your T's. They're taking, it's garbage in, garbage out. You want to change your garbage into a work of art. If you're going to change your garbage, which most people have garbage when it comes to taxes, if you're going to change that garbage into a work of art, you'd better be working with an artist. If you're going to change your garbage into a work of art, you'd better be working with an artist. So these are the rules. They're always the rules. It's so easy. And I'm going to give you five expenses now that for most people, they're non-deductible. For a few of you who will follow the rules, who will dot your I's, cross your T's, who will change your facts, for a few of you, you can make them deductible every single time. Here we go. I'm going to draw this one. I can draw this deduction. I can't draw very much. Your home. This is your home, or at least pretend it's your home. Your home normally, does your home normally have a business purpose? No, doesn't normally have a business purpose. So you don't even need to meet the rate. Don't even need to look at the other test. No business purpose. Okay, you can spend all the money you want on your home out of your business account, and all it will do is cause you asset protection liability issues down the road because you commingled funds. You used business funds for personal purposes. That's all it will do. It does not make it deductible. This is a misconception that a lot of people have, and that's why I'm harping on it. The fact that you spend it out of your business account does not give it a business purpose. So your home's a good example. So I have a home. How in the world do I get a business purpose? Well, here's what I do. I go in and I set a corner of it aside for an office. Now, do I have a business purpose for that portion of my home that is my business office? Yeah, I got to have some place to work. I need somewhere. Even if I have an office I go to where I meet with clients or meet with staff, I have an office at home where I do all my administrative work, where I do my private work, where I do my bookkeeping work, you know, my accounting, you know, the portion I have to do, right? Not the portion the bookkeeper does, right? So all that, all those things that I do at the office that I need to do, that I really need the privacy, I need quiet and privacy. So I can have this home office. Now, maybe your only office, if you're starting a business, you've got an online business and, you know, you're a W-2 employee and most of your money you make during wages, but you go, look, I'm going to do an online business. Well, you could do it sitting on the couch watching TV, couldn't you? Is that what a big business owner or professional investor would do? Would they have their office be their couch? Of course not. Remember, We have to behave like these guys. If we're going to get what they have, which is deductions for their offices, we have to behave like them. So we have to have a real office. Even if that office is in our home, we still have to have a real office. What does a real office mean? A real office means it's separate from the rest of the home. It's not used for anything else. It's just used for your business or your professional investing. Okay, one of the two. Either one, the same rules, okay? So professional investing is a business. That's how the tax law looks at professional investing, okay? They don't look at casual investing that way. They look at professional investing that way. So, for example, if you're a casual stock investor, are you going to get these deductions? No. You don't get these deductions. You don't get to use home office. If you're a professional stock trader, if that's what you do as a profession, can you get these same deductions? Absolutely. They're available. They're absolutely available to you. Because it's a trade, you're a stock trader, okay? So you're in the trade or business, right? It's a trade or business. So it doesn't have to be a business. It can be a trade. And stock trading is a trade, okay? It's a trade because you're doing it for yourself. You're not doing it for other people. right? And it's a particular profession you're doing for yourself to make money. Okay, so in that case, it's a trade. Other times it's a business because you have outside customers, right? So either one's okay. Again, you're going to behave like the bee in the eye side, meaning that you're going to have a real office. Now, will you get better results in your business if you have an office in your home that's a real office, as opposed to sitting on the couch watching TV and doing your work there? Of course you're going to get better results. You're going to get better results because you behave like the bee in the eye side. You behave like the bee in the eye side. So now, because of that behavior, you're going to get better results. So now you think, okay, so is there a business purpose? Yeah, because my behavior is going to get me better results. Is it typical for an entrepreneur to have an office? Of course. Is it necessary that they have an office? Yes. Is it going to make them more profitable as opposed to sitting on the couch? Yes, it's going to make them more profitable. Okay. No personal aspect to this. There's no personal aspect. It's a convenience factor, right? There's a convenience to it. Does that have a business purpose? The convenience. Yeah, because how long does it take you to commute? You've cut down 30 to 40 minutes on your commute by having a home office. So that makes it more profitable, right? And you have a business purpose. I want you to keep thinking about this, because what's going to happen is, as you understand and you really live these rules, you live these principles, then what's going to happen is you're going to think about you're going to start thinking about every single expense. Does it have a business purpose? Is it ordinary? Is it necessary? Okay, better document. So let's go. Home office is one. Now, home office is an interesting animal, because years and years ago, the IRS used to get all over it, until it became typical for people to have home offices. Once we started to see multi-level marketing, a lot of people doing multi-level marketing, they had a home office. Then we started to see online businesses, they had a home office. Then we see a lot more like real estate investing and other professional investing. So now they have a home office. So what's happened is that while 20, 30 years ago, where most people had a job, a home office was unusual. And so, the IRS looks at that and goes, oh, that's kind of odd. They have a home office. There's a red flag. Well, the IRS actually changed the rules, because it's so typical now for people to have a home office. Hear that word, typical, necessary, ordinary, typical. It's so typical for people to have a home office. If it's done right, if you behave like the bee in the eye, there's actually no place for you to even report that you have a home office. Okay, anymore. The IRS made that rule change. The IRS made the rule change that you don't have to highlight that you have a home office. What does that tell you? It's not a red flag anymore if you have the right tax preparation. If you have the right tax preparation, it's no longer a red flag. And it hasn't been for 20 years. Okay? So if you have a tax preparer who says, don't take the home office deduction, it's a red flag. What do you tell them? Bye. Or as my buddy says, next. Because why would you want a tax preparer who's telling you something, A, it's not true, and B, it raises your taxes? Your tax advisor / preparer, they're going to have a bigger impact on your financial future and your financial stability and your financial success than anybody in the world other than your spouse. Your tax advisor, which is also your preparer, will have a greater financial impact on your life than any person in your life other than your spouse. If that's the case, why in the world would you hire El Cheapo tax advisor or El Cheapo tax preparer? You're going to lose not only will you lose deductions you do have, that they're already there, available to you, they're going to prevent you from taking additional deductions like the home office, okay? So the home office is, by the way, it's a specific deduction in the Internal Revenue Code. There's a code section for it. Here's how you take, it gives you step-by-step instructions. Here's how to take a home office deduction, right? So all you have to do is follow the rules. Dot your I's, cross your T's. So you have a home office, okay? Now, a home office actually takes us to our next big deduction. And I'm not as good drawing this. Okay. All right. So that's about, see, I'm terrible now. Okay. So pretend that's your car. I mean, I hope it's not your car because that's a pretty lousy car, but pretend that's your car. So this is another personal expense, isn't it? The IRS says the expense you use, the money you spend on your car is not deductible unless we say it is. In other words, unless you do those things to make it deductible. So here's the number one thing they say is, look, your commute, every day you take a commute. You go from your home, right? You take your car, you go from your home. Where do you go to? You go to some other location, and whether it's an office or whatever it is, that's a commute. So it's the first drive of the day, and it's the last drive of the day. Okay? So it's the first place you go for business. It's until you get to wherever you're starting your business for the day. So let's say that you're a real estate investor and you go from your home and you go to your first property to look at a property. That's a commute. You come home at the end of the day, that's a commute. For most people, their commute equals about, let's say at least 50%. Of the use of their car is a commute. Now, let's say that you have a home office. Let's say you have a home office. Now, the first place you do business in the day is where? It's right here. That's your first place. So over here, you have your kitchen, right? And you go, and you go over to your home office. Okay? That now is your commute. There's an IRS ruling on this. That's your commute. 30 feet. So what does that make that the commute, the first trip in your car? Now what you've done is you've completely eliminated that 50% not deductible until you got a home office. So remember, I was talking about education and travel, right? Where they kind of fit together there. The education actually made the travel deductible. In this case, it's the home office that makes the first trip of the day and away from your home. But you're not traveling from your home, are you? You're traveling from your home office. Is the first trip of the day, and the last trip of the day has to be to your home office. So when you think about that, in order to increase your business deduction, the percentage of your car that's deductible and percentage of your car expenses that are deductible, you must anticipate that you're going to actually go to your home office at the end of the day. So you must do work at the end of the day at your home office. Does that make sense? So if you're going to eliminate the commute, if you go from your last, let's say that you go from the last property you've looked at and you go home and just sit and go straight to dinner, that's a commute. Now that's a commute. You must go to your home office. Okay? So unless you're going for dinner, you're going out to dinner to have a business meal. Okay? Whenever you get home, that you must stop at your home office and do some work at your home office. Am I clear? You must both ways. You start the day at your home office. You end your day at the home office. Write it down. Start the day at home office. End day, home office. And what that does is now your car becomes mostly deductible, except when you're using it for truly personal purposes. In other words, you have no business purpose, right? For using that, for that trip you're taking your car, you're going to the grocery store, you know, for your weekend groceries. That's not business. Does it have a business purpose? No. Okay, now you go to the grocery store because you've got to get groceries for the party that you're having at your house. Is that a business trip? Absolutely. Absolutely. As long as you're going from your home office. Right? If you're going from your home, let's say on Saturday, you go from your home to the grocery store to get food for your business party that you're having later that day at your home. Okay? That's a commute. That's a commute, folks. So again, start your Saturday. Start your Saturday at your home office. Finish your Saturday at your home office. Okay? And then maybe some of those trips in between, even on a Saturday or Sunday, might be deductible. Maybe you're going out to dinner with a client or a prospective client. Okay? Let's talk about that. The next thing we're talking about, we talked about home office, we talked about car. So this is number one. This is the number one expense that people miss. Number one expense. I can't tell you how many times I've been in an audience of 1,000 business owners, and I've asked them, how many of you are told not to take the home office deduction? And over 50% raised their hand. Over 50% were missing out on a very valuable deduction, because not only are they missing out on their home office, but now they're missing out on a lot of their automobile expense, right? You know, your automobile expense, your automobile could be 100% deductible, right? Depending on what the law is at the time, okay? So you got to look at our fast facts below and look at, okay, what are the deductions for an automobile, right, currently, right? Because they change all the time. So we're going to look at, okay, in those fast facts, you're going to have, you have a choice on your automobile between mileage, okay, so a mileage rate, and actual expenses. Now, if you travel a lot of miles and you have an old car that doesn't have a lot of expenses, you might be better off with the mileage rate. And in the facts, fast facts, we'll talk about, you know, how you make that decision even. Okay, we'll even have, not how you make that decision, but the idea that, can you flip back and forth? Okay, that's a question I get all the time. So that's in fast facts, okay, because that changes from time to time. So we'll keep the mileage rates, sample mileage rates, in the fast facts, and then how you deduct your car, okay? We'll put some of those in the fast facts, because you've got the cost of the car, which you may be able to deduct, which is depreciation, and then you have the actual car expenses, okay? So we'll put some of that in the fast facts for you. Let's go into number three, because number three is actually related to your car. What's number three? Well, number three is meals. Meals. Wow, that's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, how do I make meals deductible? I go to the grocery store. That's personal. I'm sorry. I go to dinner with my wife. You know, that's personal, right? Not necessarily. Think about this. So, you're a business owner or a professional investor. When you go to dinner with your spouse, do you ever talk about your business? And I'm guessing that when you go to your business with your spouse, you probably talk about business 100% of the time you go out with your spouse to dinner. Now, so is there a business purpose to that meal? Yes, you're talking about business. Even if your spouse is not involved in your business, knows nothing about your business. I had a spouse like that once. I had a spouse that was a music teacher. And my wife was a music teacher. And the only thing she wanted to know about money is how much there was and could she spend it. That was it, really. She did not want to, she wanted to know nothing about finance, numbers, et cetera. She's a total artist, right? Just want, let me teach my kids music. It was so helpful for me to be able to bounce things off of her, because I figured if she understood it, who didn't have any interest in finance, then pretty much than any of my clients who do have an interest would definitely understand it. So bouncing ideas off of her, absolutely valuable. Now, was that every business? Was that every meal the time we went out? No. No. Once a week or so, did we go out and did I make a point that it was about business? Absolutely. Does that make it a business purpose? Absolutely. Now, it needs to be ordinary and necessary. So it might be that every meal you have outside with your spouse is ordinary or a significant other, whoever. I mean, sorry, has a business purpose. Now, is it ordinary? Would it be typical that you would go out to dinner 3 times a week to bounce things off your spouse, somebody for business? Maybe not. My guess is likely not. Okay, likely not. And I would go to the next one. Is it necessary? Will it increase your profitability if, just to go and complain about your staff, right? Or complain about some customer or event? Will that make, no, that's personal. That's personal. Now, I have an advantage. I will say, my wife's a CPA. We go to dinner and we discuss new laws. We're having a business discussion. Now, you still have to think, okay, well, could you have just had that business discussion at home? Did you need to go out for that? And the answer is, yeah, once a week I need to go out with that because I need to have a different environment for it, right? So is it that or make it ordinary and necessary? Absolutely. Is it going to be profitable for me? Absolutely. I can think of dozens of times, and I've been out with my wife, and it had a huge impact on our profitability. Huge. Okay, huge. And vice versa. Okay. She's always asking me about her business because she has a completely separate business. Okay, so you can you make it, but you don't have to both be in the business, like I said. Now, will you have more of those meals if your spouse is involved in your business? Absolutely. What if you take your kids out with you? Well, let's ask the question, are they involved in your business? I have two buddies that they involve their kids in the business. I mean, to the point that one of them, he speaks regularly. He's a public speaker. He's fantastic. And he's on the road. He takes his kids with him. He'll take his kids with him to South America to speak on stage with him. He'll take his kids to Australia to speak on stage with him. Okay, so when he goes to dinner with them and they're talking about the business, they're involved. So now even children, even meals with children. Now, let's say that your children are involved in your business and you go boating on the weekend and you have a great time. Is that the ordinary necessary? Would you typically, do that on a regular basis with, I mean, even with clients? Probably not. Right? Probably not. So it's be careful here because again, you have to support this in audit. So you want to do it all legally. It all must be legally. Many times though, it's not that hard to make a meal deductible. And if we make that meal deductible, is the travel from your home office to the restaurant, put a sign up here, right? Is the travel to the restaurant, to and from the restaurant from your home office deductible? Yes. As long as from your home office, right? So are you seeing how these all work together? So here you have number three, right here. This is another one that people miss all the time. Number three is meals. Number two is car. Right? Number two is car. So we've got one, two, three. I'm going to give you two more and then we're going to wrap up here. We talked about it some already. Travel. Now, travel has specific rules to it. We already know in order for anything to be deductible as a business expense, it must meet the four tests. What are they? Business purpose, ordinary, necessary, documentation. True for all. Certain deductions actually need additional documentation or have additional rules. Travel is one of those. Okay? So travel, what we have to have is we have to have a primary purpose. So not any purpose, so business purpose, not any purpose. Okay? But a primary purpose has to be business. Primary purpose has to be business. What does that mean? That means greater than 4 hours per day. In the U.S., that's what it means, because what is it? What's a workday? A workday is 8 hours. So primary means more than half. Okay, now that's a workday. Let's say that you went from Friday and you went 10 days to Monday. Okay, this is actually my favorite length of time. Why is that? Because on Friday, my business is to travel. Okay, so on business, I may have 4+ hours of travel. Okay, on Saturday and Sunday, I play. And then Monday through Friday, 4+ hours, business. I actually used to go to a conference. It was funny. It was a tax conference. It was a conference just for tax directors of big companies. Okay, when I was the tax advisor for a Fortune 500 company, and we used to go and every day we went till 1 o'clock. We would literally go till 1 o'clock every day. Why? Because, and then they'd give us the rest of the time off. Because now we'd met the business, now we'd met the primary purpose rule. It was great. So I highly recommend that, by the way, for seminars. Because then you give them all that time, right? So 4+ hours doing business. And then what do we have? We have Saturday, Sunday. Play. Now Monday, I'm going to want to make sure actually on Friday that I have some business. So I'm going to like to have one, have like a business meal with somebody that's at that location. Okay. Not just my spouse I'm traveling with, but at that location. And then Monday, I want to also have, I want to have a business meeting on Monday. Right. And I'm giving you very specific rules here. Now, you have to document it. You have to be able to prove it, because expenses are not deductible unless the tax law says they are. So we have to document, we have to prove this, okay? So make sure you're dotting your I's, crossing your T's, keeping your receipts. By the way, a credit card statement is not a receipt. You must actually scan the actual receipt, okay, and maintain a scanned copy of the actual receipt. So again, now what I've done is I've got 4 days that I get to play. My travel is still deductible. Now this the meals and so forth, okay? I've got to be away from home. I've got to eat during those days, so those are going to be deductible. Is my spouse is going to be deductible? Maybe, maybe not. It depends on is their expense ordinary and necessary? Does that have a business purpose? Right? So their expense has to also have a business purpose, be ordinary and necessary. Now, if you work together and you're doing this together, it's easy, right? So when my wife and I travel to a tax conference, this is easy. This is business expense. I mean, it's like no brainer, right? So be careful about that. All right. Don't be taking a deduction for your spouse when your spouse has nothing to do with the business. Now, you might take a meal deduction because you're actually discussing business at that point. So it's not the travel that makes that meal for her deductible. It's having the business meet that's making it deductible. So are you starting to see that there are rules here? So this is why we go through these courses. We go through these courses because we have to get them clear in our mind as to what are the rules. I think it's pretty clear. I know the rules, right? I work with this day in, day out. I live this stuff. I'm not expecting you to understand all the ins and outs. What I do expect you to do is be thinking about it on a regular basis. The more you're focused on it, the more success you're going to have with it. The more you're focused on it, the more success you're going to have with it. It's really up to you. How much do you want to have deductible? Could you literally make everything deductible? You literally could. You could literally make every single expense deductible. It's possible. Have I ever seen it? No. Because people don't want to do business all the time. They want some time off. Okay? They want to take a vacation that is no business at all. They want to have a meal that's no business at all. They want downtime. They want a house that they can actually live in. Okay? There's not business all the time in the house. Okay? So could you make it deductible? Yes. Do you want to make it deductible? You may not. That's why I said at the top, I said, our clients routinely deduct 20 to 50% more of their expenses than they did before. They don't deduct 100% of their expenses, just that much more, right? So every dollar you get to deduct, if you're in a 30% bracket, that dollar of deduction is worth 30 cents to you. So if you spend $10,000 a month that could be deductible, let's say it's not deductible now because you haven't made it a business purpose, ordinary, necessary, but that $5,000 a month in a 30% bracket is worth $1,500. That means you're giving up $1,500 a month, which equates, by the way, to $18,000 a year. $18,000 a year. What could you do with $18,000 a year? Here's what you could do. You could buy an investment property, because at $18,000 a year, the bank will lend you $72,000, and you could buy a $90,000 property. So if you're giving up as little as $5,000 of deductions a month, which is easily done, and you're even only a 30% tax break. Remember, federal and state combined, right? Because the states follow the same business principles. In fact, every country I've ever been to allows deductions for business expenses on their income tax. Every country with income tax allows deductions for business expenses. Okay, so you're giving up. You could be buying a new investment property every single year. You want to put in the stock market? Put in the stock market. Whatever you're going to invest in, that $18,000, that is a giant number. A giant number. And especially if you leverage it. So travel is number four. All right, let's not forget. I told you five, right? So let's go to number five. Number five is education. Now, anybody who is going through this course cares about this, because you paid for this education. This education you're going through right now was not free. You paid for it. Is it deductible? Maybe, maybe not. If you're an employee and you have no business, and let's say, and you're just looking for some personal deductions for your personal, right? Which is great. Is this deductible? This course is not deductible. There's no business purpose. Business purpose, ordinary, necessary. So you make it deductible. Business purpose, ordinary, necessary. What do you have to have first? Remember, this is a good recap. You must have a business. Okay? There must be a business reason for taking the education. a valid business reason for taking the education. For me, I need, in my profession, I have to have continuing education. Well, that's obvious, right? That's easy, okay? And in fact, we're required to have 80. The reality is if you only had 80, they would question whether you have enough. The way the profession works. Let's say that's not the case, though. Let's say you're a professional real estate investor. Okay, do you need to stay up on what's going on in the real estate industry? Absolutely. So it may not be required by law. It's still a business purpose. Okay, is it ordinary? Would it be typical to stay up and get new ideas for your business, your investing? Absolutely. Is it necessary? Does it make you a profit? Does it increase your market share? Is it necessary? If you can say those three things and you have documentation. And you have documentation. It's deductible. Now, I'm going to suggest something. When you report this on your tax return, do not report this as seminars. Do not report it as online courses. Please report it as continuing education. Report it as continuing education. And if you do that, and you have, what do you have? You have 1, 2, 3, 4 rules you're going to follow. Every expense can be deductible. All right? For now, recognize that any expense can be deductible if you have a business purpose. It's ordinary. It's necessary. And there's documentation. And when you do that, and you have and you convert all of those non-deductible expenses to deductible expenses, you're going to have way more money because you're paying way less taxes. See you next time.